This is The People's Show with Bik Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The People's Show. Bik Nizar, Randeep Janda, Jamie Dodd with us. We're going to connect with our guy Adnan Virk in just a couple of seconds here. MLB, NHL Network, and the GM Shuffle podcast. We asked you, though, as we were going to break, for trivia, your chance to win a pair of Canucks tickets versus the Panthers on the 21st of this month. Three of the top five picks from the 2008 draft will play in tonight's Canucks Lightning game. Can you name two of them? Randeep, who are they?
I'll give you all three. Steven Stamkos, no surprise, he was number one that year.
So charitable, Randeep.
Zach Bogosian. And yes, Luke Shen, of course. So there you go. Stamkos was one, Bogosian was three, and Luke Shen was number five to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And who are the other two? Do you know?
Okay, well, I'm looking at the list, right? So Pietrangelo and Drew Doughty.
Yeah, Drew Doughty.
Not bad. Not bad defenseman.
Let's see if I can name out the rest of the here. So 2008, Cody Hodgson would have been in there?
That's correct. He was number 10.
Man, I'm going to fail.
There is, I will say, not in the top five, but there is another defenseman from the first round of this draft, from the lottery in the first round of this draft, who's going to play tonight as well.
A defenseman from the lottery that's also good. Oh, Tyler Myers?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, there we go. Look at us.
Okay. When it comes to defensemen in that year, guys, so you already have Doughty, Pietrangelo, Tyler Myers, who was the Calder winner.
Yeah.
Eric Karlsson was number 15 in that draft,
know.
Too.
It's so wild. I'm trying to remember. Because I remember that draft, it had the top end of Stamkos, Doughty, Bogosian, Pietrangelo, Shen. And then there was like this drop off, and then the guys thereafter all went on to have good careers too.
Also, when we're talking about defensemen in this draft, don't forget Canucks legends Lucas Pisa and Michael Delzato, back to back, 19 and 20.
Okay, during the Jim Benning era, there was they cleaned up on first round picks from like a decade ago. At one point, the Canucks had six first round picks who were just, it wasn't a good thing. Let's put it that way. Like you had a bunch of first rounders that didn't really pan out to that level, like an Eric Goodbranson and a bunch of guys. But when we're talking about defensemen, Bik, to your point, later on in that draft, number 38, Roman Josi.
Massive.
That's huge.
I low-key, I think there's a theory that could be explored of Jim Benning acquisitions that were just draft picks that got away from him. I was like, oh, he wanted Tyler Myers, but Tyler Myers went before Boston picked.
I am actually, you're right about that. I'm actually looking at this draft pick, this draft. Travis Hamonic was 53rd. So there you go, another one.
Okay.
He could have been a part of this game.
And where did Boston draft? Did they draft in and around there?
They were, they took Maxime Sauvé at 47, so well before.
Oh, okay.
Well before. So they had a shot.
Rough. I'm trying to remember the rest of that top 10 there. Was that the Filatov draft?
That was, yeah. Filatov was taken number 6.
Okay. I'm blanking on the rest of these guys.
Okay, I feel like we have to mention the winner here. Andre and Northvan
was the winner of the
pair of tickets for the Canucks and Panthers on Friday, January 21st. We're going to be giving away tickets tomorrow as well, so you still have a shot to win tickets to that game.
I was trying to do my own trivia here, Randeep. I did bring it up while you were talking about Andre. Our big winner today, Colin Wilson, Mikhail Boedker, and Josh Bailey, and Cody Hodgson rounding out your top 10. I definitely would have struggled.
Okay, no disrespect to Zach Bogosian, but when you take, in retrospect, Pietrangelo before him, you can kind of understand why the Atlanta Thrashers had to fold.
Yeah, that's rough. That is rough.
It hurts, man. It hurts. Atlanta could have been a thing.
Based on the old way we would judge this of, hey, how many games played is he gonna have? You know, Zach Bogosian's had a career. Now, he hasn't been transformative like Alec Pietrangelo or something like that, but does he get viewed as a failed pick?
No, the guy still played 700 games in the NHL. It's just, unfortunately for you, he didn't play for Atlanta, right?
He looked awesome, though, like coming out of junior.
Oh, yeah, he did.
He looks studly.
Okay, we look at the Pietrangelo pick and say it in hindsight, but I remember at the time it was a Doughty or Bogosian conversation. Like, who's going number two was the combo. So there was a fair number of people saying, hey, Bogosian should be number two. So you're right. Like, looking back at it, we all say, oh my God, how could you do that? But at the time, it was an actual legit combo.
Even going back to 2010, right? It was Taylor and Tyler. and then Gudbranson goes third. And it was, like, with a staple. It was like, yeah, this is the guy who's got the, you know, the big body, the broad shoulders, the legit D-man who's going to crush for you. And it just, sometimes it just doesn't work out that way.
It worked out for him, though. He's played 700 games in the NHL, and he's a cup champion. I think it was okay for Zach Bogosian.
Yeah. Bick Nizar and Randeep Janda here. Jamie Dodd with us. While we were in that first hour, we were busy doing a bunch of stuff. But the a couple of more coaching changes. Actually, just one more coaching changes. The Houston Texans have released their offensive coordinator and their head coach, David Culley, after one season. And I got to say, this is rather despicable because, like, what measure of success was David Culley supposed to have with the roster that was built there in Houston? And to bring him in just so he could be your sacrificial lamb so you could fire him a year from now is it's so dumb for the Houston Texans, who aren't getting a lot of wins on the field, who aren't getting a lot of wins off the field, who aren't just organizationally doing things well. And if you approach this as, hey, the real candidate we want is probably a year or two away, and so let's just get someone in that can coach 17 games and we're going to fire him anyways. That, to me, is a big red flag for any candidate you wanted to bring in anyways.
Yeah, this was a job that essentially nobody wanted last year with what was going on with the team. They're expected to win 1 to 2 games this year. Some were even considering they're so bad that they could go winless. He coaches up that team. I know that's tough to say when they've won 4 games in a season, but that's exactly what happened. Now, I do wonder what moves, you know, comes forward, comes next, right? Because you're looking at Culley. It was essentially a bad situation. He coached them up. He made them relevant when nobody thought they would actually get any wins. But when you make a move like this and you also get rid of the OC at the same time, what is that next move? And we've heard a lot of, you know, teams potentially make moves because they saw certain candidates free up. And, you know, Brian Flores is a guy that's on the radar for a lot of people. Deshaun Watson is somebody he had on his radar. Is this the Texans looking in that direction, or are they looking completely elsewhere? Because, yeah, if you make a move like this, there's got to be somebody you have in mind, right? You're not doing it for an open, essentially saying, okay, we're going to start the search now. You're probably in a situation where you're saying, okay, we have identified who we want, and we're going to make that move.
Bick Nizar, Randeep Jandel here on the People's Show. Let's talk to our guy Adnan Virk from the NHL MLB Network and the GM Shuffle podcast. Adnan, we were just talking about David Culley getting let go. It just, to me, just another bad look for the Houston Texans. Like, why did you hire the guy? If you, like, what were you expecting? The Super Bowl this year?
Yeah, it's totally true, guys. Like, here's the thing. Whenever I see a coach hired and then fired that quickly, I do think you have to start to kind of point some fingers at ownership. It just doesn't feel fair. Like, I was looking at Joe Judge and the Giants and say, okay, you're only fired for 2 seasons. Like, what'd you expect? Like, you know, I think generally feel like you got to have 3 seasons, generally speaking, I feel like, unless you're an absolute tire fire. Obviously, if you're Urban Meyer alienating everybody, you know, running afoul of every single line of decorum, that's different. But I generally think 3 seasons you should get. Okay, Joe Judge and the Giants, they were atrocious. So I guess you said 2 seasons. But 1 season, like, you're completely right, Bigger. What are you expecting? 4-13. And so that's Deshaun Watson. You waited days to make the move anyways. That's now 7 vacant head coaching positions. This is a guy who is 66 years old, had never been a head coach before, never a true coordinator at the NFL level. They had the NFL's weakest roster. A lot of people thought they'd get the top overall pick in the draft. No Deshaun Watson, and yet they actually won a few games. Like, when they shocked the Chargers in Week 16, remember that rookie quarterback, Davis Mills? Like, the fact they was able to use him, like, oh, dude, get this guy an extension. So, listen, he's worked in the NFL a long time, worked with my Eagles in, like, the 90s, Chiefs, Bills, Bucks, Steelers. He's been around a long time. So, since 2006, 12 one-and-done NFL head coaches, including Urban Meyer. A few of those, you go, okay, fine. Like, Chip Kelly did not work out with the 49ers in 2016. I get that. Hugh Jackson, a disaster, 2011 with the Raiders. Forget about all the malarkey. Mike Malarkey in 2012 with the Jaguars, and, of course, Art Shell, Bobby Petrino, and this year, Urban Meyer.
Well, you referenced Joe Judge and the Giants there. I look at that job and I say, okay, it's the big market and market you know well, being in the New Jersey, New York area. But how attractive is that position considering what you have going on at the quarterback position and that huge question mark?
I don't think it's that attractive, Randy. But I think that you're right. Being in the New York, New Jersey area, a lot of people here, you know, they have this self-inflated view of what the city is and the area is. And listen, there's no doubt there's only one New York. And if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere, as Frank Sinatra famously saying. But the franchise has been in disarray for a long time. Like, it is a sorry state of New York football taking place in the Meadowlands in New Jersey between the Giants and the Jets. And for New York, it's a cultural issue. It's what my man Michael Lombardi has said in the GM Shuffle. They are flawed from the top down. That means John Mara and all the rest of it. Dave Gettleman steps aside, retiring after 4 years as the GM, where he was completely ineffective. Whiffed on major picks, poor talent evaluator. They didn't draft well, didn't sign well. Okay, you're out. Joe Judge comes in, and he's from the Bill Belichick coaching tree, which, by the way, that tree has been rotted. Like, here's the problem. These guys work under Belichick and then all of a sudden assume that they are Belichick. But no, you've got to go earn your bones first. You know, Malcolm Gladwell, fellow Canadian, the 10,000-hour rule. Like, go take a job in college first, work for a few years. Joe Judge had never been a head coach before. So just because you've worked under Belichick in whatever position that may be, go be a head coach then and then get your chance in the NFL and say, yeah, I learned under Belichick A, B, and C, but then I made mistakes on my own. The three of us can all attest to the fact you learned more in your life through adversity, through failure, than through your successes. So I think Joe Judge is an example of a guy who hadn't really suffered. The Giants give him the job, and of course he falls apart. And for the Giants, what makes it attractive is it is New York. It's the NFC East, major market. The team will always be in the back pages of the New York Post. But the bad news is, Randy, I just think culturally they're flawed. You have to hope they hit with the GM and then hit with the coach. But as far as the team is concerned, I don't think Daniel Jones will ever validate where he was drafted. He was drafted way too high. I don't think he's the answer. Now, listen, if you swing for the fences and all of a sudden you hire Jim Harbaugh and you trade for Russell Wilson, then, yeah, all of a sudden the Giants shop could be attractive. But I think they've got a long way to go.
These franchises that are making these moves here, and I know there's only 32 head coaching jobs, and ultimately they are very coveted, but I feel like if you're not getting it right at the executive level or at the ownership level, it doesn't matter what you're doing at the coaching level. I'm excited for our conversation 4 years from now, maybe 2 years from now. It's like, oh, yeah, the Giants are hiring again. Because, like, how attractive are these positions when there's this much chaos at that next level?
And I think that's what happens, right? Whenever you take a job, what do? You ask around. You ask other people who you know, hey, did you work at that place? What was your experience like? And when you interview with a new employer, the first question I always ask is, why'd you get rid of the other guy? Like, what was it about his work that you didn't like that you're now looking for me to bring in? And you have to answer those questions, I believe, honestly and unequivocally, and say, we thought Joe Judge would be better with the offense. We thought that that no-nonsense approach would work. Unfortunately, it ruffled feathers. Okay, so we're bringing you in, whoever you may be. Let's say Doug Peterson. We think you're a nicer guy. We think you're better with offenses. You know, you helped the Eagles win a Super Bowl, et cetera. So I think that's the key is, and then whenever a new candidate comes in, they're going to ask around. They're going to call Joe Judge. Hey, what was your experience like? What was it like working with Gettleman? What's it like working with Mara? How's that New York media? What's Daniel Jones like? Saquon Barkley good? Like, I think everybody coming into a situation, everyone knows that you don't have to just jump at the first job. Like, Dan Quinn, I believe, is going to be hired. Right? He's going to get another head coaching job, former Falcons head coach, the Cowboys defensive coordinator. Like, I think he's going to get hired. But he's not running to go get a job in Jacksonville. I'm pretty sure Dan Quinn's going to be the next head coach of the Denver Broncos. Because of all the coaching vacancies, the most attractive job is Denver. They've got a really good team top to bottom. Their issue, the quarterback. They have not been able to get a good quarterback. Now, obviously, you can't miss on the most important position. But if your answer is just get one guy and just get better than Drew Locke, then it's an attractive job. Whereas the Giants and other places, Jacksonville, Miami, you know, there's lots of issues to work through.
Before we move on to the playoffs here, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Brian Flores move. That was probably the most shocking one, given that, you know, he had won 7 in a row with that team to end off the year. But with Flores, we have found out now that relationships within the organization, he's an intense character that didn't really, you know, endear him to a lot of people within the organization. Is he a top coaching candidate for you right now? Because people seem to be split. Say, yeah, he's ready to get back into the head coaching job. Others are saying maybe he needs a DC gig to get back into that and work on that before he gets the big job again.
No, I think he can be a head coach again. I think if you look at Miami, yeah, they won, but they lost 7 straight games, but they closed well. And above all, he was virtually a 500 head coach for 3 seasons. The reason he's no longer the head coach there is, I think, as he told Stephen Ross, the owner, you can't win with Tua Tagovailoa. This guy isn't good enough. And I think that type of honesty, in some ways it can be respected, but in some ways it can be frustrating because the owner says, no, he has to be the guy. We drafted him high. If you're a good coach, you can make anything special, right? You talk to any inventor, any sculptor. Hey, I give you the raw materials. If you're a genius, you can make it work. Figure it out. I think Flores have the stones to say, you know what? I can't. He's not that good. Go get another quarterback. It's not going to happen. And I think he definitely had a no-nonsense approach about him. The rumors coming out now is that he was gruff or difficult to deal with. Of course, we know that happens, right, guys? As soon as a guy gets fired, you start leaking stories, everything negative you can about the guy. So I don't know how much of that can be believed. But I can tell you this. Within the league, within people who know him, they all respect him, they all like him. That was genuine surprise he lost his job. I do not think he'll be out of work for long, and I think he'll be back as a head coach.
Talking to Adnan Virk from MLB NHL Network and the GM Shuffle podcast. Actually, before we get to the matchups, going back to Sunday night, the GM Shuffle podcast made some waves this week, Adnan. Brandon Staley, was there reasons to be concerned about Brandon Staley's process of what he did on Sunday night?
Yeah, Bick, it was earth shattering for all the wrong reasons. I mean, on the scale of idiocy, it was like off the charts. So my hand was like, 4th-and-1 in your own 18, and your defense is terrible. Like last year, me and Mike had a field day on the GM Shuffle criticizing Anthony Lynn and how poor his decisions were in critical moments. And Mike was saying, perhaps with one tongue in cheek, they would have made the playoffs with Anthony Lynn this year because at least the defense would have been better. Their defense took a step back. The fact you can't make the playoffs when you have this transcendent talent in Justin Herbert, like, what are you doing? The 4th-and-1 in your own 18, when your defense isn't very good, you're basically just giving up 3 points. And, of course, later on, calling that timeout, the Raiders end up getting that big 47-yard rush. They go for the field goal. Like, if you'd handled things better, both teams would have tied, as improbable as that would have been, and made the playoffs. Instead, now we have to watch Big Ben Roethlisberger, who I am assuming the Steelers are going to get shelled by the Chiefs, when I'd rather be watching Justin Herbert in the playoffs. So I think Staley has lots of explaining to do. I don't think you can get fired after a winning season, but I got to tell you, the amount of Chargers fans who were appalled at their coach's moves in that final game, there were plenty of them.
All right, let's look ahead to the weekend. Playoff football is upon us, and I look at that, Tampa Bay versus your Philadelphia Eagles matchup, and, generally, obviously the Buccaneers are the big and the heavy favorites here, but they don't look as strong as last year. When we're looking at upset watch, is this one where, I know it's going to be a tough one for the Eagles, but is there a path for them to win this one?
Oh, I mean, Randy, if you're speaking to my heart here. I mean, listen, the game that is the biggest lock for me is, of course, Chiefs over the Steelers, 12.5. Forget about the numbers. The Chiefs are going to win that game. I cannot see Pittsburgh winning. But can Philadelphia pull off an upset? Yeah. Will they? Probably not. But can they? Dan Orlovsky said on ESPN this week, and I agree with him, for Philadelphia to win, they're going to have to run for 250 yards. They have the number one rushing game in all of football. It changed around their season. And guess what? The Bucs defense was ranked number 3 against the run, but the last 2 weeks was awfully vulnerable. They started to show some cracks in that armor. So there's no doubt Philadelphia can run the ball with abandon. They can eat up time of possession. And I think, defensively, Darius Slay can do a job on their top receiver, Mike Evans. The problem is, and the reason why the Bucs are going to win, is they have no answer for Gronk. Like, the strength of Philadelphia is their defensive line and then Darius Slay, their top corner. Their linebackers are vulnerable, and I think Gronk is going to have a field day. I think Brady and company are just going to run wild with those two guys together, and that's why I call the Bucs to win. But anybody thinking, hey, Philadelphia, they're lucky to get in, 9-8 team, number 7 seed, didn't have a win against a single team with a winning record. Yeah, that's bad. But the bottom line is this. They improved demonstrably after 2-5, 3-6 start. And the Bucs, as you said, they are vulnerable. They are weakened. Tampa Bay is going to win this game, but I would be shocked if they go any further than that. They're just not a full, healthy roster right now.
What is the upset that you would be least surprised by?
A part of me says, Raiders over the Bengals, only because I think Zach Taylor isn't a particularly great coach either. And Burrow is sensational, but that Bengals defense is vulnerable. And I can see Carr lighting it up. And again, Cincinnati is not that tough a place to play. Mike and I were going through the numbers. A lot of road teams win in the wild card round. Like, forget about the whole home field advantage. We mentioned every year, but in football, it's completely negated, especially in the wild card round. So forget about if the game is playing in Cincinnati or in Las Vegas. Like, who cares? It's not like Cincinnati is an imposing place to play. And yeah, Burrow and Chase are awesome. They're going to get theirs. But that Bengals defense is up and down, and the Raiders are coming off this emotional win against the Chargers. They shouldn't have won that game, and yet they did. So I wouldn't be shocked if the Raiders win that game. I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, the closest line of the weekend is 49ers-Cowboys. I mean, I could almost call it a pick 'em. I think the 49ers, they've got a great pass rush. Dallas's offensive line has been overwhelmed at times, so I could see them making life miserable for Dak. Problem is, Jimmy G isn't fully healthy, And I do think that that's where the Niners could run into some trouble, although they can't run the ball, so we'll see. But, I mean, that's the closest game pick, so I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't want to call an upset if the 49ers beat the Cowboys. But to me, as far as genuine upsets, yeah, the Raiders beat the Bengals. Pats, Bills, I don't even consider a big upset, right? This is Thriller Manila. This is Pats, Bills for the third time, and Patriots have proven they can win in Buffalo before, but I do think Buffalo's a better team. It will be cold conditions, although Josh Allen hasn't been great in the cold. I saw this story he was telling. The reason why is his feet get cold. That sounds funny, but he's a guy who does so much with his feet, right? He's so nimble, moving in the pocket and running. So got to get that guy some good toe warmers, and Buffalo should be able to win that game.
Yeah, you got a double, triple, quadruple layer potentially, if possible, there for Allen. All right, looking ahead to Monday, though, I got a quarterback question for you. Murray or Stafford, who would you rather have right now? They've both had their troubles up and down to end off the year. As of right now, for 1 week, who are you going with?
I take Stafford, and I'm probably completely guilty, Randy, for the fact that, as you know, at the start of the year, I said Rams Chiefs Super Bowl. So I'm one of these stubborn old mules who just wants to stick to my guns, even though if you said to me Stafford's been a turnover machine the last 4 weeks, you'd be right. But I would argue he still has a big arm. He's still got, obviously, an incredible receiver, Cooper Kupp, who should be top three MVP. And I hope that this jittery situation he's in right now, he'll get the jitters out of his system and play better when it comes to the playoffs. Kyler Murray, again, first half sensational, second half he's been up and down, although he did rebound in the final couple of weeks. So of the two, a case can be made for either. I think Stafford's, the classic drop back passer, bigger arm, 350 yards passing, but Murray can do things with his legs. He is obviously more fleet of foot and is able to be more of a dual dimension quarterback. But I would take Stafford personally.
And Dan, we love talking to you, man. We'll talk next week.
Vic, Randeep, this is fun. By the way, I DM'd Dan. I said, I'm going to miss our conversations with our pies on, but I love the fact that we're continuing. All the best.
For sure. It's our guy Adnan Virk from the GM Shuffle podcast, NHL and MLB Network as well. Follow him on Twitter, at Adnan S. Virk. You teased it earlier, Randeep, so we finally get to your don't at me. Let's do it. We do it every day here on The People Show. You got a hot take? Send it right now, 650-650, into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox for Don't At Me.
Your takes uninterrupted. Don't At Me. Text in your submissions to 650-650.
Don't at me. I said, what I said.
It's brought to you by LeaseBusters. Get out of your vehicle lease with ease, confidence, and a LeaseBusters leasing specialist to guide you through the journey. Go to leasebusters.com to start the process today. Randy?
I said this at the beginning of the year. I'm doubling down. Don't at me. The Maple Leafs will finish behind the Boston Bruins in the wild card this season. This top three
Whoa.
In the Atlantic. Hey, I'm hearing all this praise about the Maple Leafs and what they have. I think the Bruins are ready to charge. They'll probably add one more piece at the deadline in their scoring role, especially in that middle six, the second or third line. I see the Bruins still as a top three team in the Atlantic. Maple Leafs will drop into the wild card.
That is a stunner. Stunner. I keep trying to toss dirt on the Boston Bruins, and then they just go ahead and, three in a row here, seven of their last three, 42 points in 33 games. I don't know. Maybe I got to learn my lesson and just say, hey, they're going to the playoffs. They're going to the playoffs. It does feel like we have our eight playoff teams, though, in the East, though.
It does feel like that. But if you look at what Boston's, they had a slow start. They had a very slow start. First couple of weeks, they were down there with the Islanders, and then they had to kind of pick it up. They're starting to go now. Pasternak's going. Marchand with another Hattie. If they add a little bit to that team, I'm feeling pretty confident about that. There's a 7-point gap right now between them and the Maple Leafs. But guess what? The Leafs have played two extra games.
Yeah.
So watch out.
I bet you right now. Okay, Leaf fans that are listening, text in 650-650. I bet you Leaf fans would take that. Because would they rather the wild card or would they rather have it guaranteed you're playing Tampa or Florida? Right? The off chance, I know you could still play the number one seed in the Atlantic, but the off chance, would you rather play the number one seed in the Metro, or would you rather play Florida, Tampa, or Boston?
I'd rather play the number one in the Metro. Because even if you survive that series against Florida or Tampa, do you really?
Yeah. because then you're going to have to go right through and play another one of them again.
Yeah.
And so,
and they physically beat the snot out of you, too. So you might win, but in spirit, you're going to be broken.
So while you're right, Boston might pass Toronto, and that's something to laugh about, that Toronto's going to end up in a wild card, something like that. It still might be beneficial to them to end up in a wild card.
Could they avoid the heavy hitters in the Atlantic and get like a Carolina, which, based on their experience with David Ayers, I don't know if they want Carolina either.
Jeffro, 650-650, don't at me. Kodak Black is going to show up in one of the suites in Tampa Bay tonight.
Ooh, just imagine that if he's falling around the Canucks on their Southeast trip. Just... I don't know if he's a good luck charm. He'd just be a bad luck charm, potentially.
Just goes to Carolina, meets him in Nashville. That'd be amazing.
Okay, but Bick, you know as well as I do, he has some legal trouble. I don't even know if he's allowed to cross state lines at this point.
Yeah, that's fair. That's also fair to wonder. This one, 650-650. Marcus and Gibson's, don't at me. Quinn Hughes will shatter the Canucks' single-season scoring record for D-men. Shatter it.
Shatter. Okay. Like, when we say shatter, then what are we talking about? Like 80 points? What are we saying here? What's that number?
He's got to extend it by 10 points, I would say, for shatter.
Okay, so if we look at the pace right now, the pace that he is currently on is a 66 points in 80 games or so, right? Mm-hmm. So he's on that pace. He could get there.
A single season, most is for what? 63, right?
Yep.
So he's got to get to 73? That's doable.
I think he could do it. As long as he stays healthy, I think he could do it.
650. We have two different Pettersson thoughts coming in here. Tony says Pettersson will have a comeback game tonight, a turning point tonight. And Mike, nice try, Mike, by the way, in Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Mike texts in, Elias Pettersson won't get to 15 goals this season.
Oof.
So competing thoughts.
That's kind of what it's all about with right now with Elias Pettersson. Either you're really high on him, or you believe in him, or you've essentially sold your Elias Pettersson stock. Well, here's one thing about stocks, though, folks.
Yeah.
Don't sell it when it's low. Like, no, because people remember.
James in Vancouver, don't at me. There is no comparison between Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar anymore. It's tough, man. Cale Makar has been that good. He's taken another step in his development.
That's not a dunk on Quinn Hughes moment, though, Rand. No. We're talking about a 60 to 70 point defenseman, which in normal years we'd be comparing to like an Erik Karlsson type, right? So it's just a credit to how unique Cale Makar is, more than anything.
And maybe, hey, Quinn Hughes gets a year older. He's at the same age Cale Makar is now, and maybe he has a renaissance scoring season. That's a funny thing about great players. They keep trying to get better. They keep trying to add new things to their game. Cale Makar's got a year on Quinn Hughes. I'm not saying we're going to see a 40-goal season from Quinn Hughes, but maybe we see an evolution of Quinn Hughes like we've seen already this season.
Yeah, if you had asked, hey, can he kill penalties? Most people, even I said it before he started doing that, he wouldn't. Guess what he's doing now? So you add layers to your game, right? You add additional elements. That's what makes the great players great, is that they continually improve. They don't just stop where they're at.
All right, Vic Nazar, Randy Janda, thanks for all your submissions in for Don't At Me into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. We'll talk to our guy from Dunbar Lumber, Mr. Fix-It, Ken Priestley on the other side. And also, Connor McDavid had some comments yesterday that kind of caused a stir for hockey fans. So we'll talk about that. And if he had a point on the other side, here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the People's Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Welcome back to the show, Bick Nizar, Randeep Janda. Final segment of the People's Show alongside Jamie Dodd as well from the Canucks Hour with Thomas Strantz. Go subscribe to all the pods you hear on Sportsnet 650. Ours, the People's Show, Canucks Hour, Canucks Central, Halford and Broth. Drop a five-star review. Five-star rating, at least. A five-star review would also be highly encouraged as well.
And hit us up with a review as well. Like, I want to hear what you have to say. You can be a chirp of us. That'd be preferred. I love getting chirped. But as long as it's five stars, that's all that matters.
Yes. Yes. Even if you chirp us, you better bring the effort. You better make it five stars.
Make it good.
We would love to rate your review, too. And read them and say, that's a five-star review. For sure.
Bic, I stand by it. Like, you hit me with a review. Hit us with a review. Hit the People Show with a review. I'll bring it on TikTok. We'll have some fun with it. Let's do it. Let's make it a thing here on the People Show.
Bic Nizar, Randy Janda here. On a Canucks game day as well, as they get set to take on the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll connect with Ken Priestley in just a second. So yesterday, Connor McDavid made some comments. You know, he was asked about, hey, the signing of Evander Kane and everything like that. And he didn't exactly, let's just say, reassure everyone about the whole process here. It was very lackadaisical, his response. And, you know, he basically just said, if the fans don't like it or the media doesn't like it, whatever, it is what it is. And anyone that signs Evander Kane, it's going to be viewed as an unpopular transaction, right? Let's just put that out there right now.
Yeah.
It's going to be viewed as an unpopular transaction. And Conn McDavid just essentially kind of cut through all the BS of it. And I think the reason, or part of the reason why we may have heard that from Conn McDavid is, you know, we sit here, Randy, as media members, and we get to comment on all these players, you know, their attributes, their performance, their legacies, and all this sort of stuff. Fans contribute in the same manner. And we sit down, we have these conversations of, yeah, Connor McDavid might be the best player in the league, but has he ever won? Has he ever done this? Has he ever done that? And is he ever going to be, you know, talked about in the likes of Sidney Crosby and Mario and all these great players? And that's Connor McDavid's reality. It's, hey, I've got to achieve to the level of these players. And you look at the last couple of years of who Connor McDavid has played with, it is not exactly a who's who of NHL players. You are constantly dragging players into the fight to say, hey, I'm giving you a chance to go compete in the Stanley Cup. I'm giving you a chance to, you know, fulfill your dreams. And I'm playing with Josh Archibald, and I'm playing with Drake Kajula, and I'm playing with all these guys. And now we have a chance to improve on Tyler Benson and Kyle Turris with Evander Kane. Yeah, I might sign off of that. And I think that's where part of this comes from, of here's a guy that gets judged unfairly or fairly. He gets judged. He gets put on a higher pedestal than every other NHLer in the league right now.
Okay, I understand that side of it from, you know, when you're a great player and everybody's trashing you for not winning or not being able to produce at the level that you obviously want to aspire to yourself. And I talk about the playoffs, not regular season. We know what he's done in the playoffs. But as somebody who's worked in public relations, as somebody who's done stuff like that, yesterday in the response that he gave, it might be honest, Bic, but it's lazy, man. And you open yourself up to get dragged. Like, you can communicate what you're trying to say there a little bit better. You can say, hey, people are going to have their opinions. We're going to do due diligence as this, as an organization. And, you know, if it works out, he's a special player, a special talent, but we'll see and we'll kind of take it from there. Like, you can execute that better and not leave yourself opened up to take criticism, because I can understand the frustration, but the reality is that was just sloppy execution. And when you are the best player in the game, people are going to come to you for a comment on something like that. So you better, with your team, make sure that you're ready to answer that question. Like, Connor McDavid wasn't walking into that press conference like, they're not going to ask me about Evander Kane. Of course they are. Like, that was on him and the Edmonton Oilers to make sure that he had a suitable answer, and he didn't. So I get what you're saying, but to me, you got to be prepared as a player to answer better than that.
I think it just speaks to the frustrations of what he's gone through for four seasons here, of expecting to win Stanley Cups. And yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong here, that it isn't a moment of laziness, right? And Connor McDavid has been very buttoned up through and through his whole NHL career. And it just provided a moment of like, man, considering what I deal with of having to aspire to these levels constantly, yeah, I think we saw a moment of honesty from Connor McDavid. And we ask for honesty from these players and coaches and executives when they're meeting with media. And I think we got a moment of honesty. And by and large, people didn't like it yesterday. We'll get into more of that conversation in just a minute there. But let's talk to our guy, Ken Priestley, our Mr. Fix-It from Dunbar Lumber. Vancouver Canucks playing today at 4 o'clock versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're doing this road trip through the Southeast here, Ken. What were your favorite road trips? Because it is quite a destination to go through that area, especially in January.
Yeah, I don't think I was fortunate enough to get those teams when I played. I was hoping to get to the West Coast and go to CLA. That was basically, anytime you got a chance to come home and play in front of your friends and family, that was always key for me. Playing in New York was always a key road trip, but out West was always the best one for us.
Okay, Ken, on your resume, you know, we talk about the AHL experience, the NHL experience, but tell me about the UK road trips and the BHL. That's what I want to know.
They were very easy. I mean, that was one of the, for me as a young family, that was one of the draws for me to actually stay. It was the road trips. The only time you ever went away for more than a couple of days is if you were in European championships or something like that, that were played out of country. But for most road trips in the UK, they were, you know, you leave in the morning, you come back at night. So, you know, if you had a young family, you got to see everybody every day.
These types of road trips, right? Because it's not one thing to just, hey, go through this trip here and in Southeast U.S. It's the power kind of resides in that region all of a sudden. Nashville's having success. Carolina, Tampa, Florida. It's a long road trip, but it's also difficult. There's no easy games on this schedule. When you're kind of going through the paces in this, and every player likes to, you know, measure themselves up against what the rest of the league is, but can this many high-impact games in a row in quick succession like this also have a negative?
I think it can if you get absolutely blown out of the rink every game. But you know what? I mean, this is what these guys are paid for. This is what these guys play for. They play for they're very competitive individuals. They're wired a totally different way, and I think they welcome the competition. I think they welcome the challenge, and everybody's up for it. I mean, that game that the Canucks in Florida played the other day, that was pretty entertaining on my side. I mean, it was a 2-1 game in anybody's game up until, you know, obviously 3-1 and 4-1 in a very short period of time. But we got to see a little bit of pushback from Vancouver, which I was quite excited about, being off that long and being down 2-0 so quickly that that could have been a perfect example for a team to sort of say, okay, we've been away for a while, we're out of this one. But there was some pushback, and it just showed you how good Florida is. I mean, they have a heck of a team, and they're very deep from line one to line four, and very fast, very aggressive, and they're going to be a very, very tough team to compete with going down the stretch for sure.
Absolutely, and you talk about that pushback. It started really after that second goal when JT Miller ended up fighting Radko Gudas, and we don't really see that in today's day and age, but did that kind of remind you of the 80s when right after a goal, somebody drops them and they start going at it?
Yeah, it was strange. I you know, you didn't even know why. But it just happened, right? I mean, it was great. I mean, for him to take himself out of the game, meaning off the ice for 5 minutes, for him to try and figure out a way to get his team rolling, he answered the bell and did something that I don't think he is necessarily there to do. But when you see someone like JT step up in that situation, it creates huge excitement on the bench, and they were just unfortunate not to get back to even.
What else do you expect to see tonight? Because I do think there was a lot of positives to pull out of that performance against Florida, given the circumstances and everything like that. So how do you build upon that into tonight?
I think you just take it period by period, right? Like the first period in the Florida game was a little bit of a struggle. It took us a little bit of time to get going. Once we got going, we had a couple of lapses, but you know what? In Tampa tonight, obviously they're the Stanley Cup champs. If you can't get up for a game like this, it just will tell you something as a player, as an individual, or as a team. Who knows, you know, who knows what Tampa's going to bring tonight, but obviously they bring their A game. The Canucks bring their A game. We're in for a hell of a treat. So I'm looking forward to it. We haven't seen this competition between Tampa and Vancouver in a long time. It'll be a good test.
Well, when we think about Tampa Bay, you know, they're on searching for that three-peat, which we haven't seen since the 80s Islanders. Like, that's the territory that they're encroaching on here, and they have a realistic shot at this, just being such a solid team. You know, they are a team that's kind of established that culture, that championship pedigree. You know, based on your experience of playing against the highest level and playing on some teams that were unbelievable in their own right, you know, how difficult is it to build that sort of standard within an organization where it just seems year in, year out, they know what to do, and next man up, you know, mentality is just, it seems to be ingrained in them.
It's just, it's a mindset. It really is. When I was playing in Pittsburgh, the leadership group at the top was so deep. I mean, it wasn't just one guy. It was five or six guys. And sometimes it wasn't even Mario. Sometimes it was different guys stepping up. But, When you're a young player like I was in at that time in my career, you couldn't not look at these guys that had won Stanley Cups, that had been on teams. For instance, Brian Trotche, he was an idol of mine growing up, and he won four, and he was a huge motivator and a huge guy to draw some experience, just some knowledge of what it's going to take to get to that next level. And you know, when you have that type of a player, and then to go along with a Mario and a Jagr and a Stevens and a Recchi and a Coffey, Larry Murphy, I mean, the list goes on forever for that team. They did it to themselves, because we were definitely a capable team, just going up and showing up. But when we wanted to play and we were able to play at our top level at that particular time, we were unstoppable.
We're all focused here on what it looks like during this road trip, and comparing yourselves to Florida and Tampa. Eventually this road trip is going to end and they'll be back home and continue on with their season. What do you think the response will be from the players after a road trip like this?
It depends. It really does. I mean, the success of the road trip is huge. You're judging yourself as a group that went through a lot of tough times, and then you had some, you know, a spurt here of 8 or 9 games where everything went real well, and now all of a sudden you're playing the top of the top. And there's a lot of stuff, even if you don't win these games, there's a lot of stuff that can be taken as a positive. And the one thing that I really was respected the Canucks for in that Florida game is they didn't stop. They kept coming. It was difficult, there's no question, but they didn't stop. They made it as much of a game as they possibly could at all times. I think you see a different team tonight. I think we come out a little bit more fresh. I think we have a little bit more jump, and I think it's going to be an exciting game.
People are dying to see, you know, the sharpness obviously get smoothed out a bit, and just hoping to see some semblance of return to form for Elias Pettersson. He had a kind of a big moment in the last game where it was a drop pass and it just slipped, and it because he's slumping, it looks a lot worse than it might be. Do you chalk that up to just, hey, I haven't played in a long time, or do you chalk that up to he's battling confidence, and it's a far cry from what we think we see from Elias Pettersson?
Yeah, he's in my mind, I think he's battling confidence. I really do. That type of a situation where he's thinking it's on my stick, I got a really good chance, and all of a sudden it just rolls off the heel of his stick, and his whole body language and his whole facial expressions when he goes to the bench were something there, like, come on, like, what do I have to do to just feel comfortable, right? And you're right. I think the Florida game was a tougher one for him. It looked like that he was battling a lot more than just rust. It looked like he was just frustrated, and it's going to take some time, obviously, for him to get back to the level that we all know that he can be at. It's gonna take some personal issues for him and some personal things that he has to deal through, just gain that confidence that I can score again. And usually with offensive players like that, it takes a breakout game. And hopefully it's tonight and he gets a couple of points. The earlier than the game, the better. Because, you know, speaking from experience and being able to score at different levels, the more you're in the game, the quicker you're in the game, the more success you're going to have. So if he gets one early, it might be a big night for him.
He is Ken Priestley, our Mr. Fix-It from Dunbar Lumber, two-time Stanley Cup champion. Ken, always appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Enjoy the game.
That is Ken Priestley, NHL player and our guy, our Mr. Fix-It from Dunbar Lumber.
Bick, I got to say, though, I agree 100% with Ken, though, on, you know, the confidence aspect, because if you look at his immediate reactions, even on that play on the drop pass, like, there's a reaction in the moment. He goes to the bench. There's a reaction there. And what do you do when you're least confident and you make a mistake? And this goes to, like, everybody, right? Like, if you're in the public eye, you generally react in the moment. You're essentially, if you're a broadcaster, sometimes what you do early on in your career is that you kind of, you stop in the moment and you react because something has gone awry. And I think with even Elias Pettersson, you've seen those multiple reactions that undercut his confidence. So I know the rusting, the entire team had to deal with that. But when I look at Elias Pettersson right now, confidence is not there. It is as simple as that to me.
Okay, let me separate the actual missing of that pass versus the reaction. Because I can... He's low on confidence. I'm not saying he's high on confidence and, hey, it's a guy who just missed a play. But I think in the moment, like, what is the reason why he missed the pass and then the reaction thereafter? And what's the fallout leading into a game like tonight? I think those can be two separate thoughts, though.
They could be, but I look at him and I see a little bit of both of those things. To me, he's got the skill. I don't know if he believes in the skill right now. He's got to find a way to believe in it.
Man, we will see what he can do tonight, if he does anything. And maybe it's just an empty box score for Elias Pettersson tonight. But, hey, maybe not. Maybe he gets the rebound versus the two-time Stanley Cup champions, Tampa Bay Lightning. It's going to be a good one. The pregame show getting set in moments. Canucks Central on the way. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, got you the rest of this evening leading up into the game tonight. Randeep, Jamie, we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your days. Enjoy the game day here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.